Mind Feed with Nora Casey on News Talk 106 to 108.
Welcome back to Mindfeed. You're here with me, Nora Casey. As always, you can tweet me at MindfeedNT or email me at mindfeed@newstalk.ie. Well, my next guest was born in Green Hills. He was one of 10 children and a triplet. He joined the army after his junior cert, and the young 25-year-old corporal became a hero overnight in 1992 when he won a gold medal at the Olympics in Barcelona. The welterweight boxing champion became the first Irish man to take home an Olympic gold since Ronnie Delaney in 1950. In fact, no Irishman has won gold since. Michael Cruth, you're very welcome to Mindfeed. Great sporting day, Michael. What are you up to later on yourself?
Going to watch the rugby later on. Probably a bit of Premiership as well. So, and just relax in the house and you know, take over the TV, which I normally do on a Sunday. So
yeah, Saturday was a busy day.
Absolutely, great day. Dublin playing Kerry in the football, and obviously the Kilkenny and Dublin and the hurling. Great day of GAA. So fantastic.
Michael, can I just take you back to growing up in Green Hills? You were one of 10, which is an extraordinary amount of people to compete with, and one of triplets.
One of triplets, yes. So, and yeah, 6 boys and 4 girls in the family. So, and coming, you know, we lived in a 3-bedroom house as well. So my father was an exceptional man, as my mother was. My dad was a builder by trade and a carpenter by trade, and he built on as much as he could up. As far as you could go up and as far as you could go out in that regard. But listen, it was a beautiful home. It was a beautiful upbringing. And, you know, competition is great, you know what I mean? And more competition with your brothers more so than anything. Because, as you said, I'm one of triplets. And Martin and William, my other two brothers, like, when we did get into the ring against one another, you naturally didn't have a fear against your brother. So we used to absolutely letter one another. And my dad used to pull us out of the ring more times. But I suppose the beautiful thing was about that was we really helped one another, in a sense that you kind of got that inner toughness and the will to win, and you never ever wanted to lose face to one of your brothers. And I suppose that's what drove me on to be as good as I was, that I always had that belief in myself that I could win.
So you were boxing from a young age?
Oh, absolutely. Even my, as I said, my father was a carpenter. He had us in this, he made a crib for the three of us, and he divided it into three different units. And then he said, I can't let them do that because we wanted to get at one of those as toddlers. So he took the two centrepieces out and he made this huge big crib. So all our life we were in a boxing ring, and we didn't really realise it, you know what I mean? So
we wanted to get at each other as toddlers.
Yeah, and we were, you know, that's the way, because he felt he was isolating us from separating us. And he said every day then, as you got older, one lad would be in the corner and he'd be bumping the other two down. It was a great competition, because once you got up in the corner, you didn't get back down, because you had the corner and the other two were trying to get it. He said it was great competition and great looking at the three of you doing it that way, you know.
Your father was a boxer, was he?
Yeah, my dad boxed for St. Francis Boxing Club down in Usher Quay, and he actually met my mother through boxing, because my mother's father, my late grandfather Humston, was one of the chairman people of St. Francis Boxing Club, and her brothers boxed for St. Francis Boxing Club. My uncle Martin, being Martin Humston now, was the first light middleweight champion of Ireland. So that's how my ma and dad actually met one another, because my dad used to hang around with the Humpsons, and then he discovered that they had a pretty sister. And it went from there. I think they started dating at 14 years old, and they eventually got married, and they spent 54 lovely years together before my father passed away 3 years ago nearly. Mm. And then obviously my ma passed away last year. So it's been a tough thing for the family, but I'd like to think now that they're back together, and that's the way it goes with them.
Nice thought, actually.
Yeah.
So take me back to leaving school. You know, you didn't end up going into boxing straight away. You went into the army.
Yeah, well, I was still in boxing. And then what happened was I joined the army at around 18 years old. I won an Irish title within a couple of weeks of joining the Defence Forces. And they seen the potential in me, then they kept me in the gym. So I was training full time in the army as well as holding down my job. So
Michael, we're going to talk about Barcelona in a minute, but let's talk about Seoul first. You always wanted to qualify for the Olympics.
The Olympic Games was always my dream. I remember watching it when I was about 7 or 8 years old, and such a huge thing on TV, and I had my first fight at 8 years old, and I boxed and I won in Green Hills. I used to box for Green Hills Boxing Club, and I came back to the corner, and the very first thing I said to me dad was, I'm going to win the Olympics.
At 8?
At 8 years old. And he looked at me like I was a madman, you know? And he made me promise him I'd win the Olympics. Wow. And I promised him.
Can you remember the day?
18 years later.
Can you remember the day you qualified for Seoul?
I do. I remember we were in the house on a Sunday morning or a Sunday afternoon, and you didn't actually qualify for Seoul. You got picked on merit for Seoul, where they changed the whole thing of boxing that you had to go and qualify for the Olympics. And my dad came in, he got a phone call, and he told me that I'd been selected to go to the Olympic Games for the Seoul Olympics. And I suppose what happened to me wrong with Seoul was that then I forgot what it was like to be there. I got caught up with the emotion, and we were going getting autographs and photographs of famous people, and I took my eye off the ball, basically, and I got beaten in my second fight, and it was the best experience I've ever got in my life, believe it or not. That
people always say that failures teach you more.
Yeah, absolutely, and I just said to myself, this ain't going to happen again, and if I can right the wrong of Seoul, I'm going to. And it was great, because I qualified, I went to Italy, and I qualified in Italy, and it was a Sunday afternoon, I'd qualified, and I rang, and my dad answered, and I said, you remember that bottle of champagne you had in the fridge? I said, and he says, yeah. I think you should open it, I said. And he said, what should you do? I said, I'm at the qualifying. I said, I beat him. And he jumped all over the place. And I'd made my second Olympic Games. And to be honest, to qualify for your Olympic Games, rather than being picked for the first one, it was a better thing. It was, now I know I'd earned my place.
Did you know you were going to win, or did you not think about it?
I had a sneaky feeling. Yeah, I had a good feeling. Yeah, all the omens were looking right at me, you know. And I'm not one of these for, you know, boxers are superstitious in their own right, but, you know, on the 8th of August, I won the Olympic Games. It was actually 25 years earlier. I was supposed to be born on the 8th of August. That was my ma's date. She was given that the three of us would have been born. Now, she didn't know she was having triplets. Now, we went a month earlier, where I was born in July. But the 8th of August was actually the day I was actually supposed to.
Good omen, then.
Yeah. The Olympic Games started on the 25th of July, which is my wife's birthday.
Okay.
So everything was
you're a superstitious man.
Listen, when it comes to even putting your bag together, getting ready for boxing fights, I would say 99 boxers out of 100 will do it exactly the same way.
Right.
Okay, that's the way we are. Things can't be, you know, something can't go wrong, you know, and that's why, and then it gets in your head if it does go wrong. But the omens were looking good, and I knew I was the best condition of my life, and I just knew, and I said, if the draw goes right, I'm in with a good chance.
Do you ever, I'm going to ask you now just to kind of talk me through what it felt like on that day. In your mind, do you still go back over waking up, getting ready, walking into the ring?
See, winning an Olympic title, it'll never go away from you, because obviously every 4 years you're kind of reminded of it as well. But I suppose in the first initial couple of years was the type of thing that I'm an Olympic champion. And you say to yourself, whoa. And then all of a sudden a kid might come up for a photograph or an autograph, and you say, yeah, well, you're an Olympic champion, well done, you deserve to sign that autograph or get that picture taken. And then days to me, it was just another fight. It was always just another fight. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes you can't take yourself too serious.
But it was,
you
know, a phenomenal fight.
Of course it was. It was a good fight. I got it right. Do you know what I mean? We got the tactics right. It was a tough fight. It was one of the toughest fights of my life. But in the end, you know, my hand went up, his didn't. You know, it could have easily gone the other way as well. It was a tight fight. I truly believe I did win the fight, and and his reaction, you know a winner and you know a loser when you're looking at boxers, and I knew I'd won.
I'd just watched the fight. I watched it before he came in.
And if you look at his face, you look at his corner's face, you know, it helped that there was about 500 or 600 Irish people in the arena that day as well, and they were going crazy, and everything was, we were waiting for that moment, and you know.
What was your dad saying to you?
He said, keep it together. He said, just keep it together. But he told me I'd won. And I looked at him and I said, well, I've won nothing till his hand has gone up, I said, you know. And we're too experienced to know that as well. And I'd actually rehearsed the night before how I was going to celebrate, believe it or not, because that's what you do in boxing. You rehearse everything. And kind of went out the window and I jumped all over the place.
Could have won the high jump, actually.
Absolutely. And thank God the ropes were there, because I'd have done damage to myself. But I was actually going to go down and bless myself. Now, not that I'm over religious or anything like that, but that was the plan, to go and bless myself. And then when he proceeded to put my arm up, and remembering that promise I made, you know, some 18 years ago. And I went over to Matt after and hugged him, and he actually said thanks. And I said, for what? And he says, for keeping your promise, he says, you know. And it even made it even more special, you know. So, and then you go into a little bit of a cocoon, because then you're dragged into dressing rooms. And
hey, I read a very cool story about what your father did with the medal.
Yeah. put in a dirty, smelly sock, you know. So, and as he said, they'll take this gold medal, but they'll never rub my socks, he says, you know. So, and that was my dad, all in all. He was never a flash Harry, you know what I mean? He just because we had the gold medal. It wasn't we were to walk around like peacocks and show it off. You get on with the rest of your life in that regard.
What was it like coming home?
Absolutely crazy, because my family, my wife Paula and my brothers and sisters were trying to prepare me for what was going on, because remember, I went out to Barcelona as a nobody in a sense, and I don't like using that word, you know what I mean?
But no one knew who you were.
Nobody knew me. And then all of a sudden I'm going into this kind of microwave fame, because that's how quick it was, you know. And obviously Wayne McCullough as well, getting the silver medal as well. And it was a great story, the Belfast boy and the Dublin boy, friends, Catholic, Protestant and everything like that. And you know, I wasn't prepared for what was going to await me back in.
Were you overwhelmed?
Absolutely. Well, you look at the airport, there was something like 30 to 50,000 people in the airport alone. And remember, we came in late on the Monday evening. I think it was 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning. And the airport is absolutely stuffed. And then we're driving down the old airport road. And there's thousands of people either side of the road waiting for us.
I heard they lowered the price of a pint to the 1956
yeah,
level.
Louis Fitzgerald, he owns the Traders Pub there in Greenhills, and eightpence a pint. So I was responsible for more hangovers in Dublin South than any other occasion, I think, you know. And it was a great occasion, you know. I never availed of that eightpence a pint, by the way, you know. I never got near it, you know. So, but
all the photos and the autographs, I'd say I never got near a pint.
But it was crazy, because you're getting letters from people from Galway and up the north, and you know, all over Ireland, people telling me about their kids suffering with depression and things like that, and what I've done for them watching that fight and things like that. It was amazingly, you know, so touching it was as well, the letters that I got from everyone.
Family like your father and your sisters and brothers and maybe your wife, Paula.
Yeah, Paula, yeah.
They kept your feet on the ground, perhaps.
Absolutely. The bottom line is, you know, I said earlier on, it was just another fight. You know, I've had ups and downs in my life. I've had some terrible downs in the sense that I buried a nephew who was 8 years old. He drowned in Blessing Lakes in 1989.
And I read the story, actually, Michael, about coming back on the plane with your father from Barcelona.
Yeah.
And there was a story.
About Gary, yeah, there was another drowning in Blessing Lakes that weekend. I actually won the gold medal, and Gary drowned on the 16th of July, 1989. So he was a true inspiration for me, in a sense, to do what I wanted, you know, in boxing as well. And it was an added kind of bonus as well that I pushed myself even harder for the little fella.
And
you
think
know.
You said to your father you'd have given it up if you could have him back.
In a happy. And you know, so coming from 10 brothers and sisters, you know, well, 9 brothers and sisters, you know, the quicker putting you in your place as well. Don't forget, you're still my little brother, you know what I mean? Or you're still whatever, you know, and that's the way it works, you know.
You,
and particularly my sisters, not my brothers, you know what I mean? So
I know you took a sabbatical from the army. Well, first of all, great news, they made you a sergeant overnight.
Crazy,
But you left to go out and think about going professional.
Yeah.
Do you regret that?
No. I won the Olympic Games at 25 years old. Going to Barcelona, I was never retiring from boxing. And then all of a sudden, when I won the greatest prize of them all, they were kind of forcing me out of boxing. Because people were saying, well, don't go to the next Olympics.
Strange, isn't it?
If you don't win it, it'll take away from the last ones. So don't turn professional. So I'm going, is it telling me to give up the thing I love most, which is boxing, apart from family, of course? And I said, and I wasn't ready to give up boxing. My only option was to turn professional. In a sense, I said, because I'd won the Olympic Games, now it's time to say, make some money for myself, you know, see if I can set myself up for life and what have you. If I had the option of what they have now and stay on with the funding that they would have had, I would never turn professional. Hmm. But we hadn't got that luxury 21, 22 years ago.
You gave it up in 2000, and you've done lots of interesting things. Like you've been, well, first of all, coaching lots of young kids.
Well, I'm still coaching. I'm still there. 7 days a week, you know, so it's my passion, boxing is, you know, so.
They put you in your place, I'd say.
They do and they don't. I'm the boss when I'm the boss. And but the beautiful thing is I've got so much in here that I can give back out. You know, my father gave it all his life. Yeah. Every boxing coach in the country does the same. I mean, my own son started boxing only last year, Carl. So he's doing well. He's a little southpaw like his dad. So he's crafty. So he's a bit to do to catch up.
How about Leah? Is she a budding Katie Taylor?
No, Leah is an aspiring actress. So she's sitting her leaving cert this year. She's going to Los Angeles in July with her mother. She's been picked to go to the Performing Arts World Championships.
Well.
Leah has a thing that she says, when she gets her first Oscar, she's only going to thank her daddy and not her mummy, you know, because I told her to chase her dreams, you know. And her mummy says, cop on and get a proper job, you know what I mean? But she's in the process of interviewing for college now, so she wants to go to London for college. I'm not too happy on that. I much prefer to stay in Ireland, you know. So any of those colleges in Ireland, if you're listening, Leah Caruta is her name, you know. So
get in touch with the program.
Get in touch with our daddy.
Why is it that on the men's side the boxers haven't done as well?
Come on, we're coming very close as well. Like we've had what
I wasn't really doing a boy versus girl, but given that they've been funded for the last decade, on the boys' side.
Well, when you look at the success we've had in the last decade, that there's been seven or eight medals we've won in the Olympic Games. So Kenny Egan came close with a silver. John Joe Nevin came very close with a silver. Paddy Barnes has won two bronze. Michael Conlon a bronze.
Only Katie Taylor took gold. That's all I have to say.
It's the boys against the girls, isn't it? So I'll have to challenge Katie. You know what I mean? And Katie's won a gold. You know what I mean? So that's the high performance for you. And remember, it's not a boy against girl thing. It's a team. My brother Fergal has just been recently made the new chief executive officer of the Irish Amateur Boxing Association. So Fergal's my boss, so I have to talk nice about him. And, and basically, you know, boxing, I think, is going to go on an upward spiral again now. So, and hopefully we can keep winning medals.
So just some mind feed questions, which I subject everybody to when they're sitting in that chair.
Be good,
First of all, I just wanted to know what success means to you now. When you win Olympic gold, it must be all downhill from there. I mean, what does success mean?
It's a thing that changes your life initially, I suppose, that people get to know who you are. Carruth was a name that people always got wrong. Right? They used to call us from Carruthers to Carruth to whatever. The one thing my granddad said, when he was 89 years old, at least they'll get our name right, he says. You know, they'll know the name Carruth, he says. You know, I've done anything in my life, people know my name. It's Michael Carruth, it's not Carruth. You know? So the bottom line, that's a huge plus.
Yeah, your mum, Joan, never watched you fighting, ever. She couldn't bear to watch you. Did she ever give you any advice that you remember now, looking back, that stood with you?
She always said, never knock it till you try it. So I always wonder why she was always going on about that, you know what I mean? And my mum was such a kind of, you know, she was 79 years old when she died, and she died very quickly, and she had a massive heart attack last February, and there was no goodbyes in that sense, I suppose. And, you know, Ma's advice was, you know, that, you know, she was a ma. She was there when I lost. You know, Ozzy didn't know what to do when I lost. She'd give me the cuddle and the hug, and she'd go, "You'll get him back the next time." You know what I mean? And I suppose Soul was the huge learning experience that she says, "It wasn't your time this time. It will be the next." You know, and I suppose that was the one thing when I came home from the Soul Olympics, that my mother was more my mentor for that couple of weeks than me dad was. And because I'm not saying I was sick of boxing, but I was just so disappointed how I failed in Seoul. And she basically got me back on the bike, if you know what I mean. And little things that she said to me, "You'll come good. I know you'll come good." And that was it. And I did. And she was the first up the steps in Barcelona. You know, she climbed, she bumped off everybody to get to me, and including Paula, you know. And she always made me believe in myself, and I did.
She sounds really wise, and I know we're coming up to her anniversary. So
in a couple of weeks, you know, so it'll be tender.
And now, when you look back and you think about everything that you did, is there anything that got away, Michael? I know you're not finished yet, but is there anything that you think about and say, "Wish I hadn't done that"?
Wish I hadn't done that. Probably turning professional with the guy I turned professional with, which was Frank Warren. I probably should have gone to America. And kind of exploited that when I did have hair. That red hair, freckles, blue eyes, Olympic gold medalist, Irish, the whole caboodle. Probably should have gone to America and turned professional. Probably should have took up golf at an earlier age as well.
You play golf now?
I love golf, you know. And I know there's a question
I'm
there.
Not,
I know there's another question.
I bet you're good. I just have a feeling,
I'm
Mr. 12 Competitive.
I'm not bad. You know what I mean? So, and yeah, I hate losing.
Is there anything you do that you're not good at?
I can't paint and I can't dance. Did you see me on Jigs and Reels?
I think I can testify to this.
Rocky Marciano used to have a great saying, I can't sing and I can't dance. But he said, I'll fight anybody just to be sociable. You know what I mean? So,
let me try something on you. Later on the panel, we're going to ask them if you, and I know you're comfortable being who you are, but if you aren't, if you weren't who you are, who would you like to be?
I'd love to be Rory McIlroy, golfer.
Really?
I'd love to be in his shoes for one day. Yeah, I'd love to play golf like him, firstly, you know what I mean? But and I'd love the expectation that's on his shoulders as well, because I'd kind of strive in that as well, to be the best.
Best of luck to you and to your family. It's a pleasure talking to you, Michael.
Great being here.
We'll be back soon.